Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, whenever and wherever you are listening. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Kwame, holding it down for the podcast. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. This is Soul on Ice, the podcast. And joining me, of course, as always, Double Trouble is in the house. Akil Thomas, Elijah Roberts. What's happening, boys?
Not much. What are you saying, Kwamasaurus?
It's chilling, man. You got the Kwamasaurus is kind of corny. You need to change
it. It's sticking, though.
It's not sticking. Like, I don't hear anybody else saying it besides you two clowns.
I can't even, like, say what's up. I got to clear the air about something. This weekend, Elijah and I kind of played in, like, some little tournament just at Buckingham. It was actually kind of weird. Like, you had spots on the bench where you could sit, like, 6 feet away from everyone. And, like, the D had to literally go outside the rink. It was kind of crazy. But the first or second game, our team won 7 or 8-2, one of either. And Elijah, what was your plus minus in that game?
I was plus two.
You're a dash one. So don't even
plus
lie.
Two. I was so plus two. Don't even try
on,
and cap.
From now on, we call him Dash because
don't
he's a dash
even try
one
and cap.
8-2 win. So don't
not
even
try and cap.
I'm not capping. I just called Kyle to confirm and he confirmed. So
a dash one?
Call Elijah Dash for now on.
Okay. You know how it goes with your boys. They be making stuff up, try and make you look bad. But you know what? You know what?
Elijah.
I'm a prevail. Next tournament, I'm gonna get better.
So are you admitting to the dash?
No. I'm admitting that even if they want to make stuff up, next time they won't be in a position to make stuff up.
So you weren't on the ice for one of those goals?
I was on the ice for both, but I was on the ice for four of our goals. Four.
No. Nope.
So I was plus two.
I was there. It was simple. It didn't happen.
Once again, Double Trouble has got some disputes. You know, as the tiebreaker, I don't know why Akil would lie about that. So thank you, Akil, for sending over that information. And I do see that you have a new tattoo, sir. I saw it on Instagram. Do you want to talk to us about who that is on your shoulder? And you're getting very addicted to tattoos, I must say.
Nah, I wouldn't say addicted. I have three, and they're for a good cause. I'll tell you in a bit. But I got a tattoo of my grandfather on my shoulder, and it's crazy. My dad looks exactly like my grandfather.
He does.
So people think it's just like a couple of people asked me if it was just my dad, but like I wanted to make it look older. But no, it's just my grandfather. So crazy how they resemble each other so much. But my grandfather was getting pretty old. And so when I came over and I had like the tattoo, he looks at it and like touches it. He's like, that kind of looks like me. Like, yeah, it is you. So it was pretty funny. It was pretty funny. And obviously posted that Insta pic. It was pretty cool.
You got a few other tattoos too. I know you saw all my tattoos first. It was like, I want to be like Elijah. So you went out and got some other tattoos. Mm. But what are your other tattoos?
First of all, I got my tattoo like I think a year or maybe 2 years before Elijah got his first. So I'm gonna shut
that
down.
Here comes the
captain
again. I got my tattoo in Kitchener when I was 18 years old. My first one.
Where? Which one?
Right here. The words here.
Right where? No, describe it. No. People don't know what you're talking about. Describe it.
Inner bicep. I got it when I was 18 because my dad always said, when you're an adult, you can make adult decisions, but until then. No tattoos. So when I turned 18, I got my first tattoo.
So it kind of depends on what date that was at. Because I got my first tattoo at 17, and he's a year older. So
January 25th, 2 days after my birthday.
Well, mine was in December. So
of course it was. Of course.
Anyways. So yeah, my first tattoo right on my chest for my buddy Noah Costa, who passed away. We were like best friends growing up. You know, he's quite a bit older than me, but he just like I'd come over to his house and we'd shoot pucks for like hours. We'd go in the backyard and just hang out. We were boys, and so I got that right above my chest because I wanted it. Like, I guess that was like, I think I was what I was like 8 or something when he passed away. And it really kind of hit me hard. Like it really hurt my heart. So that's why I kind of have it on my chest. And then my other buddy, who I consider my cousin, he came down to visit with his family 1 year in Florida, and ended up, you know, extending a stay for a couple of weeks, and then it turned into the whole summer. And then they just got an apartment like in our complex. So we were basically brothers for the year there, and he ended up passing away 2 years ago. And so I got that on my bicep because basically he kind of taught me, you know, to feel good about yourself. Like it's okay to be confident in your looks and your appearance and stuff. So I figured, you know, I'm doing curls quite a bit right now, get it right on my bicep. And yeah. So I got my grandfather on my left shoulder because my grandfather is all about, you know, like knowledge and reading books and teaching me lessons and all that. And I'd say I wanted it on my left side of my body because he'd always, you know, ask me like, do you work on your backhand shots? Do you work on the stuff you're not good at? So I got it on my weaker shoulder. I'm right-handed. So that's just the significance and the location there. So I'm pretty calculated with my tattoos, but definitely wouldn't say I'm addicted. I just have, you know, a few that, you know, I'd like to have. So
nice. Elijah, what's been happening with you? You got something big coming up?
Yeah, a couple things. I just locked up my condo, so I'm moving downtown. As most of you know, I'm sure I'm going to Ryerson. So for practices and workouts, just makes the most sense for me to move downtown. So just locked up our condo.
Where is it?
Pretty excited about that. And then September 11th to 13th, me, Kyle Bowlers, and Ryan Wells are putting together a tournament, 3-on-3 tournament, at the Hockey Factory, 3552 Vic Park Avenue is the address. It's a $3,000 buy-in per team, and the winning team gets $12,000. So it's a pretty big tournament. It'll be a 3-on-3 tournament. We've already got a lot of teams registering. There's a lot of pro OHL, AHL, maybe some former or current NHL players playing. So it's something we've been working pretty hard on. We're pretty excited about it.
Drop some names. Who's some of the players?
Ryan Merkley's putting in a team. Quentin Byfield. Giovanni Smith. Jamel Smith. Jamie Drysdale, I believe, is going to play. So we already got some big names. We're looking to get more. And, you know, I think the last time a lot of us have played in a hockey game was March. And for some of us, the next time we're going to play is until the new year. So it's a good chance to get out, be competitive. We want to see Toronto's best, the GTA, Ontario's best, wherever you're from. We want to see what you got, and hoping it's going to be a good event.
Are people allowed to go and see this? Probably not, right?
No, just because of COVID. We got to follow all the protocols and social distancing. But we plan on having a videographer there to capture everything. And then
A what?
Videographer. Is that not the word?
Videographer.
Videographer. Yeah, I got some work to do before school starts. But video.
This guy thinks he's smarter than me, Kwame.
I am.
Hey. We've had many discussions, so I think we're gonna have to do a poll about that soon or something like that.
Hey, man, you gotta learn every day. No, I just learned something. This is what it is.
All right. Well,
yeah, we're gonna get footage and pictures, and we're gonna make this a big thing.
Well, I'll probably be in LA by that time, but. Debating.
I don't think your team had any shot of winning anyway.
Well, no, I'm just debating flying back just to take 10 grand from you. So I'll let you know, but I wish you all the best, and you know, I'm gonna feel bad for your teammates, but yeah, good luck, bud.
What'd you call? Well, what's his new nickname again?
Dash.
Yeah. I'm not playing in the tournament. I gotta organize it and help run it. So I won't be playing in it, but that's kind of good for all the other teams. I'll give them a shot.
Good. Dash way.
I can't. That nickname ain't staying, Dash.
Yes,
maybe because I'm fast.
Yeah, you could. You know what? You could tell anybody whatever you want, whatever it means. You could say whatever you want. It's all good. All right, boys. Well, that sounds good. So, Elijah, is there any other information people can you know, just to follow it, do you guys have your own site, Instagram page? Where can people follow the progress of this?
Yeah, go on Instagram at AAO Invitational. There'll be lots of information, registration forms, rules, protocols, just everything with COVID going on. There's going to be waivers to sign when you get to the rink. We got to make sure it's run properly. So we'll be throwing information up on there and you can go check it out. And we hope we get a lot of people out. You know, we want to see Toronto's best competing and it's going to be a good time.
Look at you go, Elijah. Out of
place. Yeah, man.
Just organizing tournaments and stuff. Wow.
Yeah, man. Doing big things.
And, you know, for those who can't go and watch, there'll be a videographer there and he'll be able to.
Get out of here, man.
All right, listen, we're going to take a pause for the cause, but when we come back, we've got a very special guest joining us for the show. His name is Everett Fitzhugh. He is the very first broadcaster announced for the Seattle Kraken. It's big for Seattle. He's a great guy, and can't wait for you guys to meet him. So keep it locked right here on Soul on Ice, the podcast. All right, here we go. Our special guest on the show will make history with the Seattle Kraken, and we'll be sure to be talking about that. But for now, let's just say this brother has been holding it down with the Cincinnati Cyclones of the ECHL for the past 5 years. He is built for what lies ahead of him, and the term having a face for radio does not apply to him. This sharp-dressed brother is now the hired voice of the Kraken organization broadcast team. Let me introduce to you to Everett, the big voice, Fitzhugh. What's going on, my man?
Not much, man. Thank you guys so much for having me. This is a huge honor. This is a huge pleasure. Thank you so much for the invite. I appreciate it.
I should have said, what's cracking, Fitzhugh? I should have said, what's cracking?
Yeah.
You know?
I tell you what, they hired me, and then about a week or so later is when they went to the whole brand reveal, which was fantastic. And I'd be lying to you if I said that I wasn't already starting to think about let's get cracking, all the different puns, all the different play on words that I could make. So it's I've had quite a bit of time to really process this in my head the past couple of weeks.
Now, the famous wrestler Roddy Piper used to carry with him a little small book, and he used to write down catchphrases and all that stuff. Have you started doing that yet?
I haven't started, but I feel like I'm going to have to. The low-hanging fruit is release the Kraken, but I feel like I've done pretty good in my career, and I've been pretty creative and expressive throughout my career, so I can come up with something a bit better or in addition to release the Kraken. So that's something that I'm going to have to work on.
So how have you handled all the excitement surrounding the announcement of you being the first voice of the Kraken?
You know, honestly, it's been really unexpected. I'm not going to lie to you. I love what I do. I love the broadcasting. Play-by-play is obviously the goal and the passion and the dream, but I've also developed a real passion for the behind-the-scenes stuff, the PR, the social media, the media outreach, all the other things that I did here in Cincinnati. And I'm not going to lie to you, it was a bit overwhelming at first, but having said that, everybody that's reached out to me has been so kind and so welcoming. I've been very, very fortunate to have a lot of NHL broadcasters reach out to me. Obviously, the folks in Seattle, David Amber, Anson Carter, Elliot Friedman, Ray Ferraro. The list goes on and on and on of who is reached out to me and has offered me very nice words of welcome and congratulations and give me a call if you need it. So it's been really, really nice to see everyone so welcoming and supportive. But I'd be lying to you if I said that I was expecting it. I honestly did not expect all of the frenzy around all of this.
I love how he's flossing with all the hockey royalty that has been calling him just like it's easy, like, you know, just naming off those
I
names.
Got more if you want. I got
But speaking of names and people calling you, you know, I gave you a call when the announcement was out. And, you know, when we were talking, the one thing you said to me that stood out was that this is a job that you've been dreaming about, this opportunity you've been dreaming about since you were a kid. So let us know where you're originally from and how that dream to be an NHL broadcaster started.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I got it. You were one of the very first people to reach out to me, and obviously, I knew about you and your story and what you've done. And when I listened to the voicemail, I kind of just I paused for a second. I was like, "There's not a chance. Like this is actually real." So it was really cool to get that message. But you know, being from Detroit, born and raised in Detroit, from hockey town, so obviously we're a little bit predisposed to the game of hockey growing up. But having said that, there weren't a whole lot of black kids in my neighborhood, in my friend group that liked or enjoyed hockey. So I was a Red Wings fan simply because they were the hometown team. But it wasn't until I saw a Wings Oilers game back in fourth grade, when Mike Greer and George LaRocque were playing for the Oilers. And for me, that was huge. I remember watching that game, and I ran screaming through the house, like, Mom, there's two black guys on the Oilers. Like, there's people who look like me playing hockey. Nice. And that was just so cool for me to see, because historically, I don't have to tell you guys, you know, hockey has been considered a predominantly white sport. It's the old boys club. And for me to be able to have two people like that to really look up to and to let me know that hockey is for me and I have a place in this game was really, really big. So I was a hockey fan all growing up, went to Bowling Green for college in Ohio. I was a play-by-play announcer there for 3 years. I did a year and a half in the USHL League office, a year in Youngstown, Ohio, and then now 5 years here. So that's where I developed my passion for hockey and my passion for broadcasting. And the dream started when I was in college. And I did my first game, and I said, you know what? I'm putting all the eggs in the hockey basket. I know that it's not it's not a very popular or a well-traveled career for black people, but it's something that I'm going to try and blaze my own trail, because I really enjoy doing this. And this is something that I think that I can be good at. I know that I can be good at it, and I'm going to make a career out of it.
Yeah, and it's something you've been doing for a while, and you just kind of mentioned the places that you've been, Cincinnati, Youngstown, and Bowling Green. Out of all those places, which one kind of sticks out to you and would you say is your favorite?
I honestly, man, I think that they've all been so instrumental in getting me where I am. Anybody you talk to will tell you that it's Bowling Green. I mean, without my start in college, without the fact that I was able to be the play-by-play guy there for 3 years, and really that's where I fell in love with broadcasting, and that's where I got my passion for hockey. I'd been to a few Detroit Vipers games growing up, but like I never really gone to a hockey game as a fan until I went to BG. I never realized that hockey media, broadcasting, play-by-play, reporting, I never knew that was an option until I got to BG. So for me, I think Bowling Green, it's kind of 1A, 1B, Bowling Green and Cincinnati. I think that's kind of where it lies for me in terms of the importance and helping me get to where I am today.
You mentioned the Detroit Vipers. My dad actually, that team was his first pro team, actually. So it's funny that you said that. Yeah. But I got to be honest, you're probably the first brother I've met, or at least kind of met, that's named Everett. What nationality are you?
So honestly, you know what? That's a great question. I'm adopted. My mom adopted me when I was 3 months old. So I'm an only child of a single mom. As far as I know, I'm American. I've actually wanted to go on a little roots trip and try to track my lineage and track my, you know, where I'm from. Obviously, I know your uncle very well, Jason Payne, and he tells me all the time about his folks and being from the Caribbean and being from the islands. And it's something that I kind of envy about him and being able to know exactly where he's from. So as far as I know, I'm from 8 Mile and Myers in Detroit, but I've got family who are from Georgia. I've got family, obviously, from Seattle, New York City. So I could be from one of any from many places, but I'm hoping one of these days that I actually find out where I'm from. I do a little roots trip and to be able to nail that lineage down for sure.
You might be related to Akil. You got family in all the same spots. So.
Maybe. You do, actually.
You never know, man.
Everett seems like a Jamaican name, to be honest with you.
Okay. So I was named after my grandmother. So my grandmother's name is Evelyn. And so my name is Everett. My mom wanted a male derivative of Evelyn. My middle name is Alan, and that was actually my mom's favorite uncle growing up. His name was Hugh Allen. So I'm actually named after my grandmother and my mom's favorite uncle, and obviously Fitzhugh's a family name. So I really, maybe it's deeper than that, but for me, that's important to me. So
have you ever thought about looking for or trying to search out, you know, you talked about your lineage. You ever thought about, you know, your birth mom and your birth father and all that?
I've thought about it, honestly. You know, for me, I am proudly admit that I'm adopted. I love the fact that, you know, my mom was able to adopt me and to make me a part of our family, my family. And a lot of people talk to me all the time and they say, oh, you know, so do you know your birth mom or your real mom? And I'm like, for me, my mom is my real mom. There is no birth mom. There is no real mom. So, you know, she's my mother and I've always thought about it. She was very, very transparent growing up and she told me from an early age that I was adopted. I got it. I understood it. You know, I've always thought about it, but it's something that, if it happens, it happens. And I think that I know a few people who are adopted and for them, it's a big deal to find their birth parents and all of that. But, you know, I'm just one of these days, I know that I'm going to find them, but it's one of those things where you can only control so much. And this is one of the things that I can control and kind of do on my own terms. And when I'm ready to do it, I'll do it. But for now, I'm enjoying this ride. And, you know, my mom has always been supportive of me. She's always said, if you want to find your birth parents, it's great, but there's never been any pressure. There's never been any kind of anything like that. So I do think about it. I will find them one day, but when the time is right.
How has that shaped you as a man?
You know what? Honestly, I think it's been very, very beneficial. You know, my mom has always been the one person who's been my biggest cheerleader. She's been my biggest supporter. I tell folks all the time, you know, we love each other like mother and son, but we bicker like brother and sister sometimes, you know? So her and I, you know, I remember my first date when I was in college. I called my mom and I was like, so should I wear this shirt or that shirt? Like my mom and I were like, we're really, really tight and we're really, really close. And like I said, I don't see her as my adoptive mother. I see her as my mother and my family. They're my family. They're not my adoptive family. So, you know, my mom adopted me when I was 3 months old. So she's all I've ever known. She has been the best. She sacrificed. You all get it. Like you all have parents and our parents sacrificed for us. And, you know, she sacrificed so much for me and she is my biggest cheerleader. She's my best friend. Like everything that happened to me is because of her. And I cannot be any more grateful and I cannot say how appreciative I am enough of her.
Big up Mom Dukes. Big up Mom Dukes. She sounds like a great woman.
Amazing.
How was your time in the ECHL and how has that experience helped you prepare for what's to come in Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, I think here in Cincinnati, this has been my first real taste of working in hockey professionally. So being able to do all the PR, marketing, social media, I did team services. So I plan all of our travel, all of our bus trips, hotels, meals. You really get a sense of what it takes to do this full time. When I was in college, I did this at BG, and all I was the broadcaster. I had a sports information director. We had a director of hockey ops who did everything. So I didn't have all of that knowledge and all of that experience in the other areas. I come to Cincinnati, I learned how to properly write a press release. I learned how to, put on a press conference. I learned how to do all of the things that are going to help me further along in my career. Seattle is very, very big on community and very, very big on trying to ingratiate themselves in their community. I learned a lot of that in Cincinnati, doing a lot of the events, season ticket holder events. Again, all the media, PR, I ran our social media. So all of the things that it takes to succeed in this industry as a broadcaster, as a PR person, I did all of that in Cincinnati. So that is the biggest takeaway for me being in Cincinnati, was being able to do this on a professional level. And in a market like Cincinnati, where we have Major League Baseball, NFL, we've got two Division I colleges, brand new MLS team, you've got Ohio State, Louisville, and Kentucky all up the road, there's a lot of jostling for position when it comes to attention, and being able to get the experience from a media standpoint in this market was huge in terms of my development and my career.
You mentioned you're doing so much with Cincinnati. How did that come about? Did you just show up and they're like, you can do all this? Or did you tell them, like, no, I can do A, B, and C? How did that kind of come about?
You know, in this industry, it's kind of all assumed. I got this job here in Cincinnati. A friend of mine used to work in Orlando. He knew the outgoing broadcaster here in Cincinnati, Nick Brunker. So he was leaving, and he gave my name to our GM. And from there, it was – can you do PR? Great. Can you do social media? Great. I didn't know about the hotels and all the travel stuff. I learned that from our old head coach. I learned that from a lot of my colleagues around the league who've been doing this. So, a lot of it is trial by error. Minor league sports, there is a ton of work to be done and not a lot of people to do it. So you have to wear many, many hats. And I've been very fortunate here in Cincinnati that I've never had to sell. But a lot of my colleagues around the league have to sell tickets or corporate sales or whatever the case may be. When I was in Youngstown, I was the mascot on a couple of occasions and I sold tickets. So yes, I've you name it, I've done it all. In this industry. So, you know, it's one of those things where you may not have the skills coming in, but I guarantee you when you leave, you're going to know how to do everything in your organization in terms of helping your team be successful.
Yeah. And the Natty, that's a great town to live in. I don't know if people still call it the Natty, but I know it as the Natty.
Maybe back in like 1920 or something.
That's okay, man. That's okay. That's old school hip hop. That's old school hip hop. You're gonna be, if not already, a household name in Seattle. How do you want to use that for the good of growing the game, especially in the minority community in Seattle? Because kids of color are gonna now see you and say, if he can do it, so can I.
For me, honestly, that's the biggest, most important piece for me is. Right. Obviously, this is what I've wanted to do my entire life, my entire professional career, getting to the NHL, being a broadcaster in the NHL. Having said that, it's not going to be, well, let me kick my heels up and ride off into the sunset. Right. I was that 8, 9, 10-year-old kid growing up in Detroit. I didn't have a lot of influences in hockey. I mean, my family obviously was very supportive and, you know, you want to be a hockey fan, be a hockey fan. That's great. But, you know, outside of Mike Greer and George LaRocque and then ultimately Anson Carter when he came to the Oilers, I didn't have a whole lot of people that I could look up to and say, you know what, this sport is for me. This game is for me. So if I can be that person for the next wave of broadcaster, of writer, even hockey fan, Seattle is so dedicated and so committed to wanting to grow the game within their community. You know, they are very much on the train of wanting to foster that racial diversity, their gender diversity. The NHL has done a really good job over the past couple of years in trying to identify a lot of these issues and trying to help bring attention to them. There's obviously so much more we can do as a sport, but Seattle not only talking the talk, but walking the walk. I mean, 54% of their executive vice presidents are female. I want to say north of 40-ish, 45% maybe of our entire front office staff are people of color or female. So really trying to get people involved in. We have a very unique opportunity in Seattle. You have a town that hasn't had pro hockey in a very, very long time. You have Washington State, Alaska, Idaho, and Oregon, a whole four-state radius of people that you can try and draw from, and you can bring new fans in and an entire new community into. So that's what I'm so excited about, being able to go into the community. I've talked to their PR folks and their community relations people, Kyle Boyd, who is so excited for what lies ahead on his plate. And I'm like, man, whatever you can give me, whatever I can do to help get our name in the inner cities, in the community out there, that's what I want to do. So for me, the important part is trying to develop and to build these connections and to build these fans in our community.
So you just touched on it quite a bit there, but you see Seattle hire Kendall and Kyle Boyd. You have to kind of think that hiring a diverse staff may be something, you know, they're trying to accomplish. How does it feel to be a part of, you know, this effort for diversity and, you know, the culture of the game of hockey?
It feels great. I mean, it's to be a part of it, not only to be a part of this organization coming from the ground floor and being able to start from an inaugural franchise, but to be able to go into a place that hasn't had pro hockey in a long time or may not really understand the game of hockey is huge for me. And I think being able to work alongside Kyle and Kendall and Cammy Granato and just all the people that historically you wouldn't see in hockey. You wouldn't see a female pro scout in hockey. You wouldn't see people of color, black, Hispanic, Asian. You wouldn't see those people in the National Hockey League 20 years ago. So to be able – in front office positions, that is. So
20 years ago, you're talking like 5 years ago.
5 years ago, exactly. 5 years ago. So to be able to be a part of something like that is massive. And I've said many times, like, I think Seattle is really putting the NHL on notice because – I'll go back to COVID, right? When all the four sports canceled their seasons, you didn't want to be the last one to cancel your season. But now if you're in the NHL, like, you don't want to be the last one to get on this train to embrace diversity, to start hiring and finding people of different backgrounds and different religions and races and whatever the case may be. You don't want to be the last one. So the fact that Seattle is really the first person to embrace this as a way of life, as a culture shift is again, it's phenomenal. And I could not have asked for a better opportunity to come into.
You know, he kind of going a little bit on that. I was reading an article that was talking about how kids bullied you and made fun of you for liking hockey because you're black. And that's something I think me and Akilah both had it. People will say, like, we tell them we play hockey and they look at us like we're crazy. Like, what do you mean you play hockey? Just like, how was that discouraging at all? Did it ever, when you heard that, make you think like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this? Or was it something that you just figured, I'm going to fight against this and do what I want to do?
You know, honestly, I think it was a bit of both. When you're that young, you want to fit in. I mean, when you're 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, you know, you want to be popular. You want to hang with the cool kids. And if the cool kids aren't watching hockey, then, well, I guess I'm not watching hockey. So I'd be lying to you if I said that it didn't creep in a little bit. But I think it kind of comes full circle back to my mom. And she said that, listen, don't let anybody tell you can't do something. If you want to be a hockey fan, be a hockey fan. There are no white sports or black sports or whatever. If this is something that you like and it's something that you're passionate about, you should be able to enjoy it. You should be able to play it, to watch it. I collected hockey cards growing up. Like, it was one of those things where I realized that, you know what, I'm not going to have a lot of friends who are big hockey people, but it's something that I enjoy doing. I love watching hockey, and I'm not going to stop just because I shouldn't do this, because people say that I shouldn't do this. And it's kind of funny. I was actually on Facebook before we went on here today, and a friend of mine from high school reached out to me, and he wrote on my wall, and he said, "Man, like, I remember you talking to me about hockey back in high school, and I was not having it. And now looking at you being in the NHL, like, this is phenomenal. This is amazing. I never, ever thought that black people were into hockey. Like, you inspired me." And it was really cool to see, because this man's 31 years old. And he's like, "Okay, so you made a career out of hockey. Minimally, I can be a hockey fan." So that was really cool.
That's awesome. What are you hoping to bring to the table to make sure that your broadcast team is different from everyone else and is one of the best in the National Hockey League?
I mean, personally for me, I don't know if you've heard any of my tapes or whatever, but you know that I'm not short on energy. I'm not short on volume. Like, I'm one of those people who, it could be game 20 in November, and I'm going to bring the same intensity that I would for game 7 of the Kelly Cup final in June. So it's something that the fans are going to get a lot of passion out of me. But we've actually been talking officially, unofficially, amongst ourselves in the organization just about all of the different ideas and the different things that they want to incorporate and they want to do. And that's why my role is still so fresh and so new. You know, I'm hired as team broadcaster, but that could mean play by play. It could mean analyst. It could mean hosting. There's so many different things that can go along with this whole thing. So I think the biggest thing for me is that I really want to bring a sense of community, and I want to bring a sense of togetherness, and to steal a phrase from the NHL, hockey is for everyone. You know what I mean? Like, I want there to be different voices on the broadcast. I want there to be interviews. I want there to be community representatives. Like, I want this to be, from a media standpoint, from a broadcasting standpoint, a team that people in our community, in the Seattle community, feel like they're a part of. And, you know, the Green Bay Packers are owned by the community. People feel like the Packers are our team. And I want to have that same identity in Seattle, where people can identify with us. People can say, you know what, I feel like I'm a member of this team. Yeah, I don't play. Yeah, I don't coach, but I have a voice on this team, and we have someone, and we have people, not just myself, but whenever they hire and fill out the rest of that broadcast team, we have people that truly speak for us and have our best interest in heart in terms of the fan base and in terms of the community.
Yeah, and I think that's important. And me and Akil both played Niagara, and I think you can both say that it felt more like a family there. And even for the fans, like, everybody just felt like this was their team. So, when you said that, I thought it was pretty cool. But going into Seattle, it's your first time getting a job in the NHL. But before that, you made a guest appearance at a Washington Capitals game. So you got a little bit of taste of what it's like. What was that experience like? And is there some things that you've taken from there that you're going to bring to the next level?
You know, for that game in Washington, I think it's on the same level of when a CHL player, an AHL player gets a preseason game. They get that taste of the NHL, and they kind of say to themselves, okay, this is where I stack up. I can do this. Let me tweak a few things, and then I'll be here in no time. And for me, in the most humble way possible, I left that game saying to myself, I can do this. I can be in the NHL. John Walton was was amazing, and he was so gracious. And without him and him stepping aside for that game and allowing me to share his broadcast booth for that night, I don't think this Seattle opportunity happens, or maybe it does, but it doesn't happen as quickly. That was an opportunity for me to be able to see where I was in terms of my broadcasting ability, in terms of being able to call an NHL game, in terms of my knowledge, in terms of just a lot of things that you don't even think about. So that was really, really cool. And I remember that season, the 18-19 season, my play-by-play was a bit crisper. My media relations, my PR was a bit sharper. Everything I did was a little bit better, because when you get that taste, you just want to elevate your game. And you just want to make sure that I had the taste, I know what it takes to get there, and now I'm going to go out there, I'm going to fight like hell to make sure that I continue improving, that I continue on this path. And that was huge for me to be able to do that game. Capitals lost, I believe, 4-2. I wish I had a few more goals in the old highlight tape, but you know, I had a good Matt Niskanen call, I had a good Riley Barber call, so I threw those on the demo tape, and I'll call it a day. But to be able to do that game and to go into DC and do that, that was massive for me.
Huge. Why don't you take us through the process of you getting that job, from learning about the job, applying, interviewing, the emotions you felt when you learned you got the job, and lastly, who was the first person you called?
So, I mean, honestly, I didn't even apply for the job. Todd Ledwicky.
Big Willie.
I'm trying to be humble here. I didn't even apply for the job. Ryan Clark, who writes for The Athletic, he is the Colorado Avalanche reporter for The Athletic, and one of three Black NHL beat reporters in the National Hockey League, between him, Tarek El-Bashir in D.C., and then Eric Stevens in Anaheim. The Athletic was doing a Black History Month series across their whole platform in February. Ryan wrote a story on me about being the only Black play-by-play announcer in hockey. So unbeknownst to me, Todd Ledwicky read the article. He reached out to me and said he enjoyed reading my story. He was inspired by my story. And I'm not going to lie to you, when he first emailed me, when I first saw that email, I thought it was spam for a second. I was like, wait a minute, there's not a chance that an NHL executive is reaching out to me. But obviously I followed up, and we talked and we kept in touch, and you know, he said that he wanted to know if I was interested in joining their team, and he'd love to tell me more about what they're building. So obviously I'm interested, and then COVID hit. So as we all know, it turned everything upside down, and I was thinking that COVID was going to push this whole process back, whatever process there was back in February, push that back a little bit. But he emailed me back in May and said, you know, I know the whole world's been turned upside down and everything like that, but I'm still very much interested in you, and I want to know if you'd like a position here, if you're still interested. Of course I was. So he put together the official interview process. So two or three Zoom calls later, a couple of phone calls later, and a flight out to Seattle with my fiance later, we were offered the job, and it was something that, you know, I was very fortunate that my fiance Shelley had the day off that day. So we were sitting on the couch when Katie Townsend, their VP of communications, called and said that I got the job. And, you know, I was over the moon and so excited. She was crying. I was laughing and just giddy. And it was so cool to be able to say that, man, like after 13 years ago, I did my first broadcast period. Like the period at 18, and now 13 years ago, to say that I'm in the NHL was amazing. And you know, the first call is mom. So I called my mom, and she was happy, over the moon. And you know, my mom was like, "All right, my son in the NHL." Hey. So she was very, very happy. And we talked for a good half an hour or so. And obviously she wants the lowdown on, you know, how, when are we moving? How was the process and all that? So it was a really cool, unexpected process. It was something, like I said, I never in my wildest dreams could have imagined it was going to happen like this.
Are you out in Seattle yet? Or you still, did you move out to Seattle yet?
No. I'm still in Cincinnati. We're actually moving out there mid-September. So my start date is September 1st, but I'm going to be doing a few things remotely for a few weeks, and then we'll be heading out there. So they were very gracious enough to allow me to tie up all the loose ends and things around here. But we'll be moving out there in the next month.
So one thing I try to do with my little cousins is I try to like mentor them a little bit and just get them thinking about their future. And I asked one of my little cousins, like, what do you want to do when you're older? He's like, this might sound weird, but I want to be a broadcaster. And so really? I was like thinking like, okay, awesome. Like, what do you do that will, you know, push you forward to be a broadcaster? And he's like, to be honest, like I go on like the NBA video game and like, I literally just have the computers play each other and just commentate the game. We had a good laugh about it and stuff. But then I was just kind of thinking, like, if someone were to want to get into broadcasting, like, what would they do? And basically, that's my question to you. What are some resources and advice you would tell someone who would want to get into broadcasting?
That's what I did when I was a kid. I remember I bought NHL 03 with Jim Houston. And I remember I would put the computers together and then I would call the game. And, you know, for me, I was lucky enough in college to be a part of Bowling Green Radio Sports Organization, which is a student-run group on campus. They did all they were the flagship for women's basketball and hockey, so we did all those games. We did football, we did baseball, we did men's basketball. So if you are in college or high school and, you know, you've got any kind of athletic department, I promise you they're going to want representation. They're going to want broadcasting, PR, whatever. So, I mean, if you want to get reps, that's the biggest way to do that in that regard. But for me, I think the biggest thing that I've learned over my career, in my short career, I mean, it's only been 13 years since I've started, but we look up to the Doc Emmerichs of the world, the Jim Houstons of the world, the, you know, you name the broadcaster. These are guys that I have been listening to and emulating and watching my entire career. I was so, so happy to find out that a lot of these guys, they were in this position that you were in at some point in their career, and they are all willing to help. And I've been very fortunate over my career that I've been able to reach out to the likes of a Jack Michaels, of a John Walton, of other NHL broadcasters and say, hey, listen, can you listen to my tape? I'd love to pick your brain a bit. Here in Cincinnati, obviously Buffalo's our affiliate, but Dan Dunleavy has let me come up to Columbus and shadow him for a game. We went down to Dallas earlier 2 years ago to play Allen, and I was able to shadow Tom Hawley, who is the Dallas Stars PR person, a Bowling Green grad. So I was able to use that connection there. The athletic writer for the Dallas Stars, him and I, actually went to college together. So he got me in the press box and I was able to pick his brain a bit. So you'd be surprised at how many broadcasters and how many reporters and writers and whatever you reach out to and will tell you, yeah, let me know. I'd love to email and pick your, and you can pick my brain or whatever. If they weren't willing to help, they wouldn't give you their card. They wouldn't give you their email address or whatever the case may be. So I would say, don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for advice, for critiques. I mean, that's what I did. And again, I made the connections and I was able to keep in touch with folks. And it's never about what you know. It's about who you know, especially in this industry. So that's the one thing that I've learned and I've been able to take with me my entire professional career.
Yeah, that's something my parents have told me from what I can understand words, it's the people that you know and the connections that you build. And one of the things you just mentioned there, other sports at Bowling Green, I know that you played baseball when you were younger.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about broadcasting baseball instead of hockey? And how did that transition into hockey start for you?
So I did, actually. My favorite sport growing up, I was a baseball player. I'm a baseball fan to this day. There's nothing better than grabbing a beer, going out and sitting in the left field seats and enjoying a baseball game. Like, for me, that is my happy place. That is my my mecca. I just enjoy doing it. But I love the action in hockey. I love the back and forth nature, the fast paced nature of hockey. And I think as a fan, my love for baseball is why I work in hockey. You know, I enjoy being able to escape and to get away on a hot summer day and watch a baseball game. And I broadcasted a few baseball games. Baseball is the hardest sport to broadcast because you have so much dead time and so much downtime. And for me, I did it without a color analyst when I was in college. So I did, you know, 3-hour broadcast alone, which for hockey is fine. But in baseball, when you're talking to yourself through lulls and rain delays, I remember one time I did an entire doubleheader by myself, 6.5 hours, seven wow. hours of baseball by myself, and I enjoyed it. It was fun. Never again. Never again will I do that. So I think I love baseball as a fan. I love hockey as a profession, and I put all the eggs in the hockey basket. Obviously, I'm a big hockey fan. You know, our games are over with at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. I'll come home and watch the late game on a Saturday. You know, I love hockey. I love watching the sport. And I think it's just something about the game and the people that I've met, the industry, everything about it that just makes it so attractive to work in.
Yeah, you're definitely that guy. You know, one day we'll get past the first, but for now we have to acknowledge them. We have to celebrate them. We have to make sure as a community we support them. And with that being said, 50 years down the road, we hope there will be more Black team broadcasters, and they'll all look back and say, Fitzy was my role model. Fitzy was the first, and he opened the door for all of us. Is that a lot of pressure for you, or is that the kind of challenge that you're always up for?
You know what? I think it's the challenge that I'm always up for. I've always believed, and I've always said this. Some people agree with me. Some people don't. I don't think you ever really set out to be the trailblazer. But if you are in a position where you can help bring the generation behind you ahead, if you can help inspire other people, if you can help foster other people's love and passion for the same thing that you do, I think you owe a responsibility to run with that. And for me, it's something that, like I said, I didn't have those influences growing up. So if I can be that influence for those kids and for the next wave of broadcaster, that's fantastic. And that's something that I welcome with open arms. And I'm all about trying to educate people on the sport, on the game, on the industry of media, broadcasting, PR, whatever my expertise and whatever my experience is in. I hope I better not be the only Black broadcaster ever. I better not be. And I better not be the first for a long time. You know, I really hope that there is a kid who was on my heels that I've not met yet that is ready to break into this. I was very, very fortunate to meet a guy through COVID. His name is Trey Matthews, and he works for Adrian College in Michigan. He is the women's play-by-play broadcaster. And as far as I know, him and I are the only two play-by-play guys in hockey. So Black play-by-play guys in hockey. And I've talked to him, and I've listened to his tape. He's on his way. And that's what I want. I want more people of color. I want more Black kids to get involved with this, because it's something that, like I said, I appreciate and I welcome the responsibility, but it's something that you never want to do it alone. And if you can see somebody who is as interested, as devoted, as dedicated as you are, I think it only helps not only us as a sport grow. I mean, that's where we want to go as a sport of hockey, but I think it also helps a society to grow. A sport that is considered predominantly white historically that has made great strides in the last 5 years in terms of breaking down these walls. That's where I think we want to see us go overall.
There's a lot of programs for kids getting into hockey, for getting into other sports, but I don't really know if there's anything for getting into something like broadcasting. Have you done any work like that to get kids of color into broadcasting, or is that something down the road you can see yourself setting up a program to kind of introduce kids to that?
I haven't done it. I haven't seen anything, but it's 100% something that I want to do. And you as players, you know, you're able to teach and to coach and to train that next group of players coming up. I want to be able to help train that next group of writer, of media person, a broadcaster in this industry. So I haven't done it yet, but it's on my radar, and it's something that I really want to do in terms of trying to help bring along more broadcasters of color, more black kids, even just fans of the game in general, but especially PR folks, broadcasters, and media people.
Well, I know for a fact that, I absolutely hate listening to myself talk. Would you say that it's kind of the same way when you're watching yourself broadcast?
Hate it. Absolutely hate it. It's I hate the sound of my voice, but I listen to myself because that's the only way you get better. You know, you do film, you watch.
Wait. Can you tell Elijah and Akil that one more time, please?
I knew it was coming.
I listen to myself and I watch tape and I watch film because that's the only way you're going to get better. And your uncle, Jason, is a huge believer of video. I mean, he puts together some intense video sessions and he's all about training our guys here in Cincinnati on how to get better. But I hate the sound of my own voice. You know, there have been a few broadcasts in my time in Cincinnati where the call wasn't good. It just wasn't there, and I messed it up completely. And I'll go back and listen to it over and over again. Like, man, what did I do wrong here? So I do listen to myself. I don't like listening to myself. I've been very, very fortunate that there haven't been too many egregious errors, but you are your biggest critic. So, you know, people tell me all the time, oh, you sound great, you sound good. I'm like, what game are you listening to? That was terrible. Did you not hear that? And it's something that only I would notice, or my fiance or my friends or my mom, like the people that are closest to you that know you best, they'll pick up on it. But the other 20,000 people who are listening have no idea what just happened.
Fitzy, you know this guy in here?
Oh, yo! What's up, man? You were on the other side of the video. What's up, Painter?
Welcome back.
Welcome back, Jason Payne.
Oh yeah.
For everybody out there just joining us, is Jason Payne out in the Natty. Jason wanted to jump on, give a shout out to his nephew. Give a shout out to Everett. Painter, how you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. How you guys doing?
We're good. All good over here, man. We're all good.
I just got a haircut, eh, Painter?
I got to keep it high and tight sometimes.
Everett, I thought it'd be great for Painter to jump on just to, A, again, congratulate you on your new position. And also, we need some inside scoop, Painter, on some crazy Everett stories out in the Natty.
Register was there. What? Yeah, Everett's had some classics. He keeps everybody on their toes, definitely. Yep. You know what? We love him. We've always loved him. And, you know, we ride him hard. We rib him. But you know what? He's one of the best in the business in our league. And there's no doubt and no reason why, you know, he's in where he's going right now. So, we have a lot of stories. We have a lot of fun, but that's what makes the league. That's what brings the stories, you know? So
how about the dress code?
Oh, well, I mean, hey, he's got his A suit. He's got his green suit. He's got.
All right. No. The green suit was novelty only. That was once a year. At most, it's twice a year. That's it.
I don't know. There was a lot of requests for it from all the Cincinnati fans. Yes. A lot of requests.
So, Painter, how's the team doing? For our audience, let everybody know your position in Cincinnati, the team, the whole nine yards, and how you know Everett, please.
Well, I'm the assistant coach of Cincinnati Cyclones. Everett was obviously our guy that wears many hats. So we work closely together. You know, I run the defense down there in our penalty kill. You know, we've had a successful team the last few years, and we're going to continue to do that. We work under the Buffalo Sabres affiliation with Rochester. So we do a lot of their prospects and handle a lot of their guys, developing them and getting them ready to make the jump to the next level. So, you know, it's a village that raises a young child. It's like a same thing. It's a whole organization that develops players. So, you know, that's what we're here to do. Even from Everett, Everett's a key component in that as well. So, that's things that we do down in Cincinnati, and you know, have fun and try to win.
How is Seattle going to benefit from Everett being a part of their broadcast team?
He's been in the community, working the community level on many different occasions. It doesn't matter. He can fit in. He can blend in. He makes things work. He's great with the people. He's able to get out there and connect with the people, connect with the fans, and let them be a part of the organization, be a part of the team, and just want to keep coming back for more. It's amazing when I watch him when we do like team functions, and you would think the players are the ones getting all the autographs. And I look over and Everett's holding court and he has about 20 people in front of him and they all love him. And I'm like, okay, well, first star of the game, Everett fits you. So when Everett walks in, it's like, you know, he lights up the crowd for everybody. They love it. And we joke all the time. I see Everett walks in, you know, with his nice little strut, give him a little wave to everybody. Hey, how are you? Hey, how are you? Hey, how are you? And I'm like, hey. So, you know what? He brightens up the room. He brings a lot of energy and a lot of life. And, you know what? We enjoyed him a lot when he was there. And we know what? We're all going to definitely miss him.
Well, listen, Jason, thank you so much for jumping on. Everett, you got anything for Jason before he goes?
Yeah. I mean, I've told him this before, and I will never, ever skip on an opportunity to say this publicly. When I found out that he was going to be our assistant coach a couple of years ago, I had the same reaction that I did when I saw Mike Greer and George Jaroch playing for the Oilers the first time. To be able to work alongside another black man in hockey, trying to carve his own path, and just studying him and getting to know him and his background and his training programs and development, and just seeing that he is as committed as I was, as everybody else is, to get to that next level was something that I really admired and I really enjoyed. And, you know, I always say, you know, he never, ever misses an opportunity to big brother me or to uncle me. And it's one of those things where, like, I'll always be appreciative of everything he's done for me. And to this day, like, I called him when I got the job and I was like, straight up, am I ready? Like, let me know. And he's never pulled any punches. He's never been one to lie to you, and he'll give it to you like it is, because he wants to see you succeed. And he's been a big reason and a huge piece of why I was able to improve over these past couple of years under him, under Matt Thomas, and everyone in Cincinnati. So, you know, Painter's always going to be a great friend to me. He's always going to be on speed dial, phone call away. And this is someone that I'm always going to hold in high regard and speak very, very highly of.
Well, Painter, you're one of the few black coaches that are on a major level out there. And just from, you know, me knowing you as a little baby, you know, I'm rooting for you, brother. I'm rooting for you. And hopefully one day we'll get to see you out there on the majors behind the bench, maybe in Seattle. Who knows?
Who knows, man? You know, sky's the limit. I tell everybody, you know, go for your dreams, man. Go for it. So, but I appreciate it, though, man. Thanks so much,
Jason. Thanks for joining us, man. We'll let you go, and we'll get back to it, brother.
All right, man. You guys be good. Akil, Elijah, stay good.
Of course. Thanks, Painter. Everett, I'm going to see that green suit, eh?
Yeah, we need to see the green suit, I mean, man.
I've got the blazer. So I the full suit, I actually I got rid of the pants, but I got the blazer around here somewhere. So I think it's in a box getting ready to be shipped out. So
that's awesome. Hey, listen, when I was a radio announcer, I looked up to people like DJ Red Alert, Angie Martinez, Howard Stern. Who did you look up to, and how have they inspired you to be the broadcast you are today?
So growing up, you know, I didn't even know that play-by-play was an option. I was going to be Stuart Scott. He was number one on SportsCenter, and that's who I was going to be. I enjoyed him. John Saunders, obviously. It wasn't until I got into hockey more that I started getting to know a lot of the broadcasters and a lot of the play-by-play guys. Being from Detroit, big baseball fan growing up, Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Tigers for 50, 60 some odd years. I mean, he was the soundtrack to my summer and to millions of other people in Southeast Michigan and all over the country growing up as baseball fans. So Stuart Scott, Ernie Harwell, big Pistons fan, George Blaha, obviously growing up as well. So, and then when I got into broadcasting in college, that's when I discovered a lot more of the play-by-play guys. I discovered the Jim Houstons of the world, the Bob Coles of the world. When I was growing up, being from Detroit with Ken Daniels, and just over the border, we had CBC Hockey Night in Canada. So being able to listen to a Chris Cuthbert and guys like that, you don't really appreciate them, I guess, when you're 10 years old. But, you know, when you're 16, 17, 18 and starting to realize that this is a career and something that you want to do, you start to pay attention. So, you know, I've got my favorites and I've got guys that I try to emulate and pick and choose and pull things from. But for me, those are probably the biggest influences, at least growing up, in terms of how I wanted to get into broadcasting.
You're straight up a broadcast nerd, bro. You're like a broadcast nerd.
Oh, yeah. I listen to every year. My goal during the NHL season is to listen to every broadcaster at least twice. Minimally one time, but if I can get to everybody twice, that's great. I've got my favorites. I've got guys that I listen to more than others. You know, and I try to bring a lot of their energy and a lot of what they do into what I do. But yeah, I mean, again, just like Akil Elijah, you guys are watching players and McDavid and Crosby and Ovechkin pull off those moves. I'm watching Jim Houston and John Shorthouse and Jack Michaels pull off their calls and things like that. So it's kind of the same thing, except on a nerdier level. You're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong there.
You may just answer the question that I have, but for me and Akil, all summer we're skating, we're working out, we're training. Yeah. What do you do when the season's not? Is that what you do when the season's not going on? You listen to old tapes, or you kind of just take an off season? How does that training kind of work for you?
A little bit of both. I'll go back and listen to my old tapes and just see what I did and to see what worked, what didn't work. And I think that, like I said, that's how you get better. But in this industry, in the ECHL, it's a 24/7 job. So the season's over. I have 2 weeks, 3 weeks of a vacation. I can kind of chill and relax and calm down. But once, you know, we're in the summertime, we're getting ready for promotional schedules. We're getting ready for player signings and marketing materials and trying to get ready for next season. So there really never is an off season, especially at this level. Having said that, like I said, I do go back and listen to my own tapes before in the summer times. I do have a few NHL connections that I've reached out to, and I'll send my tapes to them and get some feedback. So in season, I do a lot of listening to other guys, but in the off season, I critique myself and push forward toward the upcoming year for whatever team I'm with.
So, you know, players always say that they need that first hit to get the nerves out and relax, you know, and I can't imagine the energy that's going to be in that building in Seattle that opening night. you know, not only in the building, but in the city. What are you going to need to feel relaxed and get yourself in that groove?
Man, that's a really good question. I think for me, the biggest thing is going to be, and this is going to sound so cliche, and I apologize in advance, but for me, it's going to be making sure that everything that I've done to get to this point, I don't forget. And, you know, there have been a lot of sacrifices. And again, Painter can tell you so many stories of calls and whatever. But, you know, you need to realize, and for me personally, trying to realize that this is something that I've been working towards, I've worked hard for, I've sacrificed for. And it sounds very much cliche, but when I did that first that game with the Capitals a couple of years ago, my preparation was the same. My approach to the game was the same. It was, even though I treated that preseason game like game 7 of the Stanley Cup final, for me, that preparation, everything that went into that game was just how I would do for a normal Cyclones game. And I think being able to put that all in perspective and to be able to say to myself, you know what, you got here for a reason. This is something that they trust in you to do for Seattle, whatever that role may be. And you're here for a reason. So there's no need for you to be freaked out or riled up or tense. Go out there, call your game. And I think it's going to be just the intensity is going to be up here anyway, because you're an inaugural team. It's a brand new team in a brand new city in the NHL. So that night is already going to be the biggest night probably in Seattle sports history to date. Yeah. So just adding another layer on top of that is something that I'm looking forward to. I'm going to embrace.
Is there any way we can get a little taste of Everett Fitzhugh broadcast? Or are we saving that for opening night?
That's like asking a rapper to freestyle, you know?
Yeah, if we got a rapper,
we get,
we're ask
we get a little freestyle.
I can give you a little freestyle. So I'm just gonna throw in some names from the Cyclones and I'll just make something up. All right.
Or how about this? How about Akil and Elijah? They're on the same line. They're going on a 2-on-1.
Five loses the puck.
Oh, all right.
Okay, that's a set. That's we're setting it up like that.
All right. So, okay. Loose puck in the defensive zone. Thomas and Roberts out on a 2-on-1. Roberts up the left wing side across to Thomas. Thomas should score.
Hey. That's pretty dope. Okay. I like that.
Yeah, a little.
Could have been a little bit more dramatic.
Hey, he had no warm up. We threw him on the spot. That was good.
That's true. I like it.
I do have a flair for the dramatic, though. So normally, like, you know, I'll be able to throw a bit more in there. But that's on that notice.
That's what we got.
I don't like how Akil scored. You know, you could have said Akil with the puck, pass it over.
He has to be realistic, right, Elijah?
A little bit. We get it. Hey, you score a lot of goals.
Hey, Fitzy, listen, man, we can't be more happy to, you know, see you in this position and, you know, and just kind of anticipate what's going to happen. I mean, I cannot wait. I'm honestly excited just to hear you rock it over there in Seattle. But before we let you go, we always do this thing. It's our top five songs. And, you know, for you, this is opening night in Seattle, your first broadcast, you're on your way to the arena, you're listening to five songs. What are those five songs going to be?
All right. So I've been thinking about this quite a bit. So it's all over the map. Okay. And I apologize in advance, but being from Detroit, I was raised on Motown. And I was raised on like 70s and 80s soul. So
love this guy. In no particular order,
I gotta throw some Stevie Wonder as in there. Love me some Stevie Wonder. I gotta throw some Saturday Night Oliver Cheatham in there as well.
Okay.
I've gotten really, really big into EDM over the past few years. So, like, I love EDM. I love it. So I got to go anything by Morgan Page or Calvin Harris. So I'm Coming Home is a song by Calvin Harris, or by Morgan Page, that I absolutely love. I'll listen to that song all day. I got to support the Kendrick Lamar, Be Humble. Like, I love Humble. That song is another one that I got to put on my top list. And then you're going to laugh at me, but this is an old Hockey Night in Canada promo song. When Nickelback redid Elton John's Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, song just fires me up. And then I got a bunch of like honorary mentions. Like, I'm a big Billy Talent fan. I love the Gap Band. Like, so many different songs I could have thrown into this whole thing.
So on your way to the rink, you're always hyped up. You got your music. You know what you're going to be listening to, right?
Oh yeah, no. There's no, everything is up here when I'm on my way to the rink. So,
Everett Fitzhugh, thank you so much for joining us, my man. Like I said, congratulations, and you're gonna kill it. You got the support, brother. You're holding it down, and we can't wait for you to do your thing out in Seattle.
This has been an absolute honor, an absolute pleasure. Thank you all you guys so much for having me on here, and this will not be the last time we speak, no. I'm sure, but I appreciate this opportunity, and this has been a lot of fun. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, real quick, where can we find you on social media? Let the people know.
Yeah, so I am I'm on Twitter right now at The Voice Fitz, TheVoiceFitz. A lot of people, my fiance included, are trying to get me on Instagram. I think I may have an Instagram coming here soon. I don't know. We'll see. But Twitter is the best place to find me for now.
Dig it. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you guys very much. I really appreciate this. Thank you so much.
So that was Everett Fitzhugh holding it down on the podcast. You know, one of the newly announced broadcasters for the Seattle Kraken. What do you think, Akil? Can you hear him calling a goal that maybe you score against the Kraken one day when you're playing for LA?
I mean, that'd be pretty cool. That'd be awesome. You know, he kind of threw us off guard there. So I actually want to watch him on TV. Like, it'd be pretty cool. So yeah, I can't wait.
He sounds like the real deal.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah, he's going to be dope. So, hey boys, great show today, as usual. And for everybody out there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. Make sure you check us out on social media. We are So On Ice, the podcast. And make sure you hit us up. And then next week, we'll hold it down once again. So make sure you keep it locked right here. And we'll see you next week.
And when we make it, we gonna put our soul on ice. Because when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Are dusting, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power, statistic of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson, I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, it's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold the show and older, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need ya, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Let's escalate to caddy, crush the pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz. Why that big truck? I don't give a f. Only really want a house with a kid. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense. It's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the past from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. Young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Nice.